wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
So, this week on Dear Science, we have quite a bit of COVID stuff, and we're starting off by talking about eradicating COVID.
Yeah, so in Brazil, as you probably have heard, there is an awful lot of COVID and a very high number of fatalities. And they have been struggling to get the vaccine out to the people. And a university near Sao Paulo has tried to do an experiment. And I think it's partly really to show the community that the vaccine that they have actually really does work. And this is what they've done is they've looked at a small commuter town in southeastern Brazil and shown that even a vaccine that had pretty low efficacy in some trials can really dramatically control the pandemic. In Brazil, they've got a few vaccines available, but one of them is one called CoronaVac, which is made by a Chinese company. And it's had some questionable or the sort of the clinical trial results haven't been as good as some of the other vaccines. It's one of the vaccines that uses a modified version of the virus that is not infectious, but to generate an immune response. And so these scientists have done is that they've taken a small town called Serrana in near Sao Paulo in southeastern Brazil, and they have essentially vaccinated the entire population of this town with two doses. And as a result, the symptomatic cases of COVID-19 dropped by 80% since the start of the vaccination. Related hospitalizations fell by 86% and deaths fell by 95%.
That's great news.
Very dramatic change. And this was for a vaccine that maybe isn't the best.
Yeah? Oh, wow. So who knows what it's going to be like once these better ones are even out there.
Exactly. But even a vaccine, it seems like any vaccine is better than nothing.
Yeah.
You know. And in comparison, cases have risen out of control in 15 other nearby towns and cities. So saying this, there's been concern about this vaccine, CoronaVac, which uses this inactivated copy of the SARS-CoV-2 virus to stimulate immunity. And this is why the data from this study is so reassuring to many of the scientists in Brazil, where CoronaVac, this particular vaccine, makes up 80% of the vaccine doses administered so far. So Brazil has the world's second deadliest COVID-19 outbreak with more than 460,000 deaths officially. It's behind the United States, but ahead of even India. So, and Brazil's vaccination campaign has been slow to get off the ground because of scarce vaccine supplies, and they're still only targeting the elderly and patients with comorbidities. So only about 15% of the population has at least one vaccine dose.
So is this vaccine a two-dose one like the other ones?
It is, yeah. But it works in a different way to, say, the Pfizer vaccine, which is the one we'll be getting, or we are getting here.
Yeah, okay.
And this is in addition to the fact the town was never closed, it was never isolated from the neighboring cities, and the researchers started to see a reduction in transmission almost immediately after the first group got its second dose. And by the time the third group in this town received the second dose, about 75% about 75% of the eligible population was immunized, and the outbreak was effectively under control. So this is a really good sign for countries like Brazil and even India and places like that.
That's great.
Yeah, vaccines are scarce.
Yeah. So continuing on with COVID, we definitely saw at least last year with a lot of countries locking down that people weren't traveling, and that means a lot when it comes to sort of air pollution. So what's it sort of looking like now?
Yeah, so obviously air pollution has been one of the most severe forms of environmental damage, and the World Health Organization has estimated that air pollution kills 7 million people worldwide every single year. And data shows that 9 out of 10 people breathe air worldwide, 9 out of 10 people breathe air that exceeds WHO guideline limits on acceptable levels of pollutants. So worldwide, more often than not, we're breathing air that is probably harming us. Yeah.
That's insane.
And so last year and currently this year, we have this terrible virus around the world, and people have been traveling less and they've been driving less. Emissions from fuel combustion account for about a quarter of CO2 emissions from human activities. So impacts on lockdowns on transport around the globe has been quite dramatic. According to the International Energy Agency, average activity on the world's roads fell by almost 50% compared with 2019. So 50% less traffic, which is huge. And so the improvement in air quality was pretty clear to see. And if you go on the web, there's lots of comparison images of 2019 versus 2020, and smog's gone and the skies are clear and things like that. So urban areas were recording massive reductions in a range of pollutants associated with cars, internal combustion engines. There were marked reductions in nitrogen dioxide and particulate matter across 10 cities studied by a UK team. But unfortunately, as quickly as the air quality improved during the lockdowns, it appears to have returned to normal when the lockdowns were eased or lifted.
Surprise, surprise.
Big surprise. So, and the other sort of negative side is that, unfortunately, there was very little impact on CO2. CO2 is obviously the major greenhouse gas, and it's released when we drive cars and things like that. So carbon emissions did fall during lockdowns, but the data from the World Meteorological Organization showed that it only marginally slowed the overall rise in CO2 concentrations. So this the CO2 and the greenhouse problem is a much, much bigger deal. Yeah, so some pollutants disappear quite quickly. CO2 is a different animal. And so it really makes us, we should really think about, when we open back up, how we do it. I mean, economic growth after the pandemic should maybe be focused on low emissions, more sustainable pathways, rather than just going back to the old ways.
Yeah, I would hope so. So moving on to our last topic, which is non-COVID, we're looking at the universe and how it's mapped.
Yeah, apparently we made a map. So there are maps of the universe, and there are maps of the universe. Cosmologists have unveiled a big trove of data to try and answer some questions about some of the things that puzzle them the most, namely dark matter, which is this stuff that we can't see, but it seems to affect us gravitationally, or affect the universe gravitationally. And even more weird, this thing called dark energy, which seems to be pushing everything apart at an ever-increasing rate. And so there was a survey of the southern sky. It's reconstructed how mass is spread, or matter is spread, across space and time. And it's the biggest study of its kind. And this is called the Dark Energy Survey, or the DES collaboration. And the team observed the sky for 6 years between 2013 and 2019, using these massive cameras on the top of telescopes at the top of mountains in Chile and other places. And they covered about a quarter of the southern sky, including about 300 million galaxies.
Wow.
So an awful lot of
stuff. I forget there's so many other galaxies out there apart from our own.
Yes. Yeah, an incredible, an unimaginable amount. Yeah. And so that they were able to group the galaxies by color. And that's important because the redder the galaxies tend to be further away from us, because as light travels and the universe expands, the wavelength of the light expands as well, and the galaxies look redder in color. So the redder the galaxies, the redder stars are typically much further away. And so by sort of categorizing on the basis of color, they can look into a sort of a third dimension, which is time, so they can look back in time. And so this 3D map, three-dimensional map, provides a record of the universe's history. And then they can start to look at, indirectly, the forces at play. So these include the gravitational pull of dark matter, which is this invisible stuff that, that makes up about 80% of the universe, but we don't really know what it is. And it seems to be involved dominantly in the formation of galaxies and clusters of galaxies and things like that. And the idea is that the gravity... when you have big, massive galaxies, it curves space-time, or the curves of the space. So when light passes through it, it doesn't travel in a straight line. It travels, it's sort of bent by these galaxies. And they can look at how the light has traveled through time by looking back into time, and to see and see things like how the shapes of galaxies have been distorted. It's like looking at galaxies through distorted glass, so they look wavy and misshapen rather than looking like pristine galaxies. And so they can sort of indirectly measure back in time and see how light has passed through the universe. And the upshot is, it sort of agrees with what cosmologists have been measuring or calculating, but they found that the universe is slightly smoother than expected, meaning that the universe is more evenly distributed. Matter in the universe is more evenly distributed than they would have otherwise expected, and they also found slightly less dark matter than would be expected, also from prevailing models of cosmology. Don't know whether it gets us any closer to figuring out what dark matter and dark energy and things like that actually are, but it's answering some questions about maybe what happened in the universe's history.
I think the one thing that sums this up for me is wibbly wobbly timey wimey. Like,
basically, that's right.
Oh,
it's just every time dark matter. I think dark matter is just every time whether you or Ellen is talking about it. It just, I just don't get it. That's over my head, and I'm just gonna have to accept that.
It's just stuff. It's just
wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, that was Dear Science. Thank you so much, Marcus.
You are very welcome.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.